Ordinarily, I call Anthony, and there's like a good 5-10 minute stretch where we just like BS around and we talk about like, wow, what we're gonna talk about on the episode today. When I counted in to start recording, we had been on the line for 37 seconds, so we're flying blind today.
Yeah, I love those chats of ours, especially so early in the morning my time that it almost always is. It's great. You're the first voice I hear on these days.
Hi. Hi, fella. Oh,
hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you? You make it's 8:45 in the morning there. You make it sound like we're doing this at 5 a.m.
Yeah, well, when you're blowing rails until 4 or 5 in the morning, you know, it's tough.
Well, that's true. That's just what happens when anybody moves to Los Angeles. They just turn. You're just a massive coke fiend now, as yeah. It turns out. So crazy.
That's how that works.
It's nuts. So, hey, hi, everyone. Welcome inside the latest edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, talking Colorado Rockies baseball, which ordinarily by this point in the year turns to be a very frustrating and futile endeavor. And this season,
it's a prospect podcast.
Yeah, basically. By this point in the year, we're just talking prospects. This year, as we welcome you into episode number 104, things are still going good. Still good.
Yeah, the still Rockies good. They're doing okay. They have only the most wins in the National League. Only one team has more than them in all of baseball. That's the Houston Astros.
Man, the Astros are killing it this year.
The Astros are killing it this year.
They look so good.
They own a 2-game lead so far in the National League West. They are 13-6 on the road. Only one team has more road wins than the Rockies this year, and that is the same Houston Astros. Everything seems to be coming up Milhouse right now for the Rockies,
which is not a feeling that we are used to.
No, especially on the road, especially in late May. The Rockies just took 2 of 3 from the, yes, first place Minnesota Twins. They have 3 games with the Cincinnati Reds, who have lost 6 in a row coming up this weekend. And then the Phillies coming out after that for a 4-game stretch at Citizens Bank Park. The Phillies are 10 games under 500 currently. They have lost 4 in a row. There's a shot for the Rockies to do some things on this road trip. They haven't really done on a 10-game road trip in quite some time.
You know what is kind of crazy is they take 2 out of 3 from the Twins. And at the beginning of the season, I think you would have thought like, oh, well, the Twins are going to be a pretty bad team this year. And not the Twins are a world-beating team, but they're 20-17. They're a first-place team. There's a ton of talent on that team. The crazy thing about the Twins is, like, you look up and down that roster, and it's like, oh, yeah, we've been expecting all these guys to be really good for so long. Buxton, Max
Jose
Kepler.
Barrios. Oh, my
Jose
God.
Jose Barrios was ridiculous last night. Miguel Sano is finally turning into the guy that everybody sort of expected him to. And Barrios last night was that somebody we tweeted out just how good he looked, and somebody said, very glad that we're not going to have to see him for at least another few years in interleague yeah. play unless the Rockies play him in the World Series, because that's about how good he looked. And the thing, I'm happy about that because he's a prospect that I think a lot of prospect people have been excited about for a while. And for whatever reason, he dominates AAA and never does well in the big leagues, but finally seemed to be getting it figured out over his first couple of starts at the big league level this year. But the point being, the Twins are not that bad of a team. And you go on the road to Minnesota, you take 2 out of 3. The other thing that kind of stands out to me in a similar vein, the beginning of the season, the Rockies go on the road, they get things started, they win 3 out of 4 at Milwaukee, and you think like, okay, yeah, they won 3 out of 4, that's good, it's great, they're on the road, and it's always good when they can win a series on the road, but it's the Brewers. The Brewers have been good this year, too. They're 24-18. They have the 3rd most wins in the National League right now. So even the things that, like, at the start of the year, I think we started trying to, like, distance ourselves from enthusiasm about, even those things you can kind of get excited about. Like, winning a series on the road from the Twins is good.
The Rockies have won or split every road series so far this year, and the only split was that 2-game set they had in Los Angeles.
Not bad.
Think about that for a second.
Not bad.
The Rockies have won or split every road series this year. They have the best road ERA in baseball, 3.05. Even yesterday, when, you know, they ended up splitting that doubleheader, they allowed 3 runs in splitting that doubleheader.
Yeah. I mean, like, you get frustrated by the fact they couldn't score in the nightcap, but splitting a doubleheader and winning a series on the road is, like, the ultimate goal. And the fact that they allowed 3 runs, you got to look at that and be like, oh, man, maybe they should have swept the whole series.
Yeah, and the wild thing is yesterday with the pitching performances of Herman Marquez and Tyler Chatwood, they both ended up going the same amount of innings, and they could not have had more divergent starts, in at least apparent divergent starts. 5 innings, Four hits, one run, two walks, three Ks for Herman Marquez at 101 pitches. Tyler Chatwood, five innings, five hits, two runs, five walks, four strikeouts in 105 pitches. You look at those two stat lines, you go, oh, well, there's a little bit of control issues, but, you know, they're pretty much the same performance. You watch Marquez yesterday, you're like, man, he really dominated. He had his stuff. The Twins fouled off a lot of pitches. You know, he was able to get out of some jams. Chatwood forced himself into all those jams by throwing, I think, 6 of 24 first pitch strikes. I mean, that's not going to win you too many games.
Yeah, not great.
But kudos to Tyler Chatwood, considering that he had clearly no control whatsoever. He ended up battling pretty well. And at the end of the day, he ended up having almost as many swings and misses as Jose Berríos did in the game, because the Twins just had no clue what was happening or where the ball was going.
Yeah, and I think we need to. I think we all need to have a conversation about Tyler Chatwood.
Sure.
Because we've discussed. You know, we sort of led into this conversation and then didn't follow it through last week, the last couple of weeks, talking
us?
About
no way.
No way. We got sidetracked. But over the last couple of weeks, you know, we talked about how good all the young guys have been and rookie starters. And if Jeff Hoffman comes into the rotation, who does he replace? Whatever. Tyler Chatwood. And you know, I mean, to be fair, that start yesterday ends up looking okay, I guess, at least in terms of runs allowed, not really sure. In terms of anything else, but, you know, he goes out and allows two runs over five innings. Okay. Tyler Chatwood also this year has a complete game shutout in which he two hit the Giants on the road, and he also beat the Diamondbacks at home, allowing one run over seven innings on two hits. So he has those. Aside from that, he's been pretty bad a lot of the time.
Yeah, he's got those starts, too. Those five yeah. runs in five innings, five runs in five and a third.
Yeah, five runs in four and a third his last time out against the Dodgers. The walks have been very high, especially since the beginning of the year. He walked one in his first outing and one against the Giants in that complete game shutout. Since then, he hasn't pitched a game in which he's walked fewer than three. So Tyler Chatwood has not been good. And he right now would seem to be the guy who's on the bubble. And if the Rockies want to say Jeff Hoffman goes out and just dominates for a stretch at AAA Albuquerque, because Hoffman in his major league start against the Dodgers looked very, very good. Yep. His work this season with Albuquerque has been good. It's been a little up and down, but his last three starts have been very good. Seven innings in a win over Las Vegas on the road, one hit, no runs allowed, eight strikeouts and three walks back on April 28th. Six innings on the road at El Paso, another very hitter-friendly ballpark, five strikeouts, one walk, two runs on four hits. And last time out, we're recording this on Friday, it was 3 days ago on Tuesday, on the road at Memphis, five innings, one hit, one run, four strikeouts, four walks. But opponents are batting 206 against him. The strikeout numbers are rebounding, 33 strikeouts and 39 innings. They're not the dominant types of numbers that you kind of hoped for when the Rockies acquired him, but there's still a lot of room for growth there. As we've talked about, Jeff Hoffman's 24. Is Tyler Chatwood safe is the ultimate question.
You texted me a couple of weeks ago being like, after Jeff Hoffman starts saying, they're going to have five rookies in this rotation eventually, aren't they?
Yeah.
And it was somewhat in jest, tongue-in-cheek a little bit. But at the same time, it's not that far off. I mean, yeah, Tyler Anderson will be in that rotation. He's not a rookie, blah, blah, blah.
And John Gray eventually, but sort of the same thing.
Yes. We're talking about who are the best pitchers the Rockies can put out there every fifth day. I'm not sure Tyler Chatwood currently fits that mold. But he is there for a lot of different reasons. Tyler Chatwood is there for, you know, games like last night, because you don't give a rookie starter the kind of leash that Bud Black gave Tyler Chatwood last night when he clearly had no idea where the ball was going. You expect Tyler Chatwood, because he is a veteran, even though he is only 27 years old, 28 years old, you expect him to get through that and be able to show the rookie starters in your rotation that Tyler Chatwood and guys like him can compete without their best stuff. And Tyler Chatwood's going to be a guy that can pitch some innings, especially later in the year when some of these rookies run up against innings limits, or when they get a rough stretch and they gotta, you know, maybe get bumped out for a start or something like that. Tyler Chatwood's going to need to be there to be able to get through the entire season, obviously health permitting. So that's why Tyler Chatwood's going to be there. I think it'd be very, very unlikely that he would be moved from the rotation when John Gray comes back, because I'm sure they want to have that kind of presence in there, but there's no argument that Tyler Chatwood is one of the five best starting pitchers the Rockies have put out there this season. That is for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like you said, there's a lot that he provides in the rotation that isn't – you definitely give him a longer leash. You know, if this was the same situation, Herman Marquez had gone through nine starts and was putting an ERA north of five on the board and not really keeping his team in position to win a lot of games, then I think you certainly look at making a switch there. But Tyler Chatwood has proven – he can be a very reliable starter. This season hasn't necessarily borne that out. I think if we get to the middle of June and this is still a similar situation with him, then I think the Rockies certainly look at making a move in the rotation. But that also plays into something we talked about last week, which is it's not often that we talk about like, oh, man, the Rockies just have so much depth. Tyler Chatwood then theoretically provides you an option in a Jordan Lyles type of role or in a Chris Russon type of role where right. if you need to move somebody into the rotation to take that spot, Tyler Chatwood theoretically could be a long guy. He could be a swing guy. He could be in your bullpen. And that in seasons past, the Rockies go out and 20% of the starting rotation doesn't look good. And that's being generous. Generally, it's 40 to 60% of the starting rotation or 80 to 100%. Normally, that's like a death sentence because there's nobody there to take the spot and look even approaching the same level of competency as a starting pitcher in the major leagues. But this year, that all feels very different. They need to see something from Tyler Chatwood. The same way that we discussed, they really needed to see something from Carlos Gonzalez. They really needed to see something from Trevor Story, those types of things where we haven't really, as of yet, I think even seen that stuff. Although, you know, Cargo seems like he's maybe starting to get it figured out. He's got hits in, I think, six of his last seven now. He's got the average booming all the way up to the 210 mark. You know, they got to get something out of Tyler Chatwood soon.
Yes. Let's talk about Chris Russon for a second.
Yeah, how about Chris Russon, man?
I'm a huge Chris Russon fan.
Yeah,
because you know
we're happy
done
for Chris.
The
Russon.
Thing for the with a, him as a starter, you never want him to be starting games for you anymore. But in the role he has right now, it is a perfect role for him, especially in a young rotation. Guys who maybe won't be working into the seventh or eighth innings in a lot of these games, working the fifth, maybe the sixth. Chris Russon has got a rubber arm. He is a perfect guy to bring in after you throw almost literally anybody and get people out. This year, he's appeared in 14 games. He has an ERA of 2.28. He has 20 strikeouts in 23 and two-thirds. He's only walked four batters. Opponents are hitting 195 against him. I mean, he has been almost like the perfect bridge between this young rotation and a dominant bullpen.
He really is very much the unsung hero.
If Bud Black did not have Chris Russon, I think this team would be a lot different this year. Chris Russon, I know this isn't like a perfect stat, but when he comes in and pitches in a game, the team is 10-4. That means he's pitching in a lot of either close games or games where the Rockies are winning. And because the Rockies haven't blown anybody out this year, that means he's pitching in probably a lot of very close games. And he's coming in, he could work multiple innings. He's worked as many as 3 1/3 innings in a game this year. But most of his outings are more than one inning anyway. He's worked of his 14 outings, only five have been an inning or less. So he can come in, he can get outs, he confounds hitters, and really all he's doing is just making it so much easier on Bud Black to get through his, you know, to let a starter go five innings like Herman Marquez yesterday. It's easier when you can bring in a guy like Chris Russon. You go, hey, Chris, Herman Marquez only won five. You want to come in and get some of this done? He's like, yeah, I'll throw an inning in a third. You know, I'll strike a guy. I'll give him a couple hits, but only throw 18 pitches. It's fine. Like, he's so economical. Yeah, he's the unsung bullpen hero of this bullpen so far for Bud Black.
Chris Russon in his career. And yes, granted, there is a large variation in terms of the total workload. But as a starter in his career, he's made 49 appearances. As a reliever in his career, he's made 42. He's thrown 260 innings as a starter, 88 1/3 as a reliever. His ERA as a starting pitcher is 5.19. His ERA as a reliever is 2.95. And
with the Rockies, those are better as a starter.
Yeah, that's in total.
29 starts, 5.49 as a reliever in 38 appearances, 75 2/3 innings, 2.26.
Like, what? And it really does. he's kind of a case study on how certain guys just feel better in certain roles. The guy that I always think about in this conversation is a guy that we worked with in Myrtle Beach in 2010, and that's Paul Clemens, who had been in the big leagues with the Marlins and the Padres and Paul Clemens and the Astros as well. Paul Clemens, when we were in Myrtle Beach, he was coming up through the ranks in the Atlanta Braves organization and was a reliever. The Braves wanted him to be a reliever. Paul Clemens really liked starting, and I remember there was a time in 2010, and the team that we worked for that year had a loaded rotation, but there was a time when some guys were on the DL, there were just some different transactional moves, that type of stuff, and Paul Clemens was forced into a starting role for a couple of days and really thrived that way. He started to begin his career a little bit in 2008 and 2009, and then in 2010 was primarily a reliever, but he did make 8 starts that year for the team that we worked for, Myrtle Beach, and that was out of 27 appearances, and I remember talking to him and being like, what do you like better? And he was unequivocal. He said, oh, I like starting better. I don't like coming out of the bullpen.
He freaked out. He was so happy he was starting.
Yeah, basically. The enthusiasm,
he was a very excitable character. Yeah.
Was very palpable. And I asked him why. And he said, as a reliever, it's just difficult because you don't know when you're going in. You don't necessarily kind of what your day is and that you could be put into a spot where you're going to throw. But you don't know that you're going to throw until a few minutes before you're going to go into a game. Right. And it's stressful. There's a lot of anxiety that goes into that. You got to get up. You got to get loose. All that. But with him, he felt like, when he starts, he gets to go out and stretch when he wants to stretch. He gets to listen to the music that he wants to listen to when he's getting ready. He gets to throw the stuff in the bullpen that he wants to throw, all of that stuff. That getting a guy into that mentality is very important. And for some guys, it's a flip side of that. For some guys, I remember talking to LaTroy Hawkins about this one time in a story that I did for Rockies Magazine, where he said when he was a starter young in his career, he could never get – if he went out and struggled – he could never get himself mentally back on track. He said the thing about relieving was if he went out and struggled, the next day he could wipe his hard drive clean, as he put it, because there was a chance he was going to throw again. But when he started, he would throw poorly, and then he would just stew over that for the next 4 days until he got another chance. So some guys just are that way. And I'm not speaking for Chris Russell saying he is that way, but some guys just thrive in that role. And I give the Rockies a lot of credit for recognizing that and not putting Chris Russell back in a circumstance where they're like, we need somebody else in that fifth starter spot. Can you give us some innings? I think it's very big of them.
Because he'd always be like, yes, of course I can pitch. I can start.
Sure, I can give you innings. Yeah.
But no, we don't want that.
They're not necessarily going to be good.
We've seen what happens when Chris Russell faces a lineup 2 or 3 times. It doesn't go well. First time, great. Second, third time, nah.
Yeah.
Did I wake up today thinking I was going to talk about Chris Russell and how much I loved him for 5 minutes? No, I did not think that.
We were going to have a big Chris Russell breakdown. But, I mean, you're right. There are guys who are kind of the glue of teams, guys who have to hold teams together, and Chris Russell right now is really one of those guys in the Rockies. That's a valuable asset to have, especially because they need somebody to be that, because of the fact that the other guys that they have who are theoretically long guys in the bullpen, Jordan Lyles still has an ERA of about 8 to 7.94.
I really don't get that.
Scott Oberg has fallen into that category too. And Scott Oberg's not a long relief guy. He hasn't thrown more than an inning in any outing this year. But Bud Black the other day, I thought, was going to snap Scott Oberg's neck on the mound in that series finale against the Dodgers.
That was one of the harshest "I'm not mad, I'm disappointed" rips I've ever seen from a manager to a relief pitcher.
Now,
that
I will say this, to be fair, this season, Scott Oberg has thrown in 19 games. He's only allowed multiple runs in 2 games. He's allowed one or fewer runs in 17 of his 19 outings this year. And about midway through, I think through his first 9 outings, he had an ERA of 2 even.
Good.
Yeah, he was really good. And then came the meltdown against the Nationals. And since then, it's just felt uneasy. It's felt unsettled. With Scott Oberg, and that game against the Dodgers. He went a third of an inning, he walked a batter, he allowed a hit. The Rockies got out of it, they get the win in the series finale, but man, yeah, Bud Black was not pleased. Not pleased. And that was the game, too, where he went out Antonio Senzatella, you know, through kind of gutted his way through five innings when he didn't have his best stuff. That was such a weird game. The Dodgers seemed to be on the poised in the top of the first inning to just break things open. And then all of a sudden they run into an out at third base. They end the inning. And then Julio Urias goes out in the bottom of the first. The Dodgers got two. He gives up three. And it kind of looked at the start of it like, oh, man, maybe this is the day when Senzatella gets knocked around. Senzatella ends up going five in that one and getting the win. Hashtag pitcher wins. He's 6-1. And Urias only lasts through four in that game. But Senzatella, you know, Bud goes out, looks all proud of Antonio Senzatella. And the flip side of that is he just looked like Scott Oberg. He looked like he was the son that he was so disappointed in.
Yeah, he was definitely the Fredo.
He was absolutely the Fredo. He was totally the Fredo. Yes, that wasn't great.
This is the wonderful thing about the bullpen for the Rockies right now and how Bud Black has been able to manage it. I told you a couple of podcasts ago that Mark Sweeney was in studio for MLB Whip Around,
right.
And he was saying that since he knows Bud Black very well, working with the Padres for so long in Fox Sports San Diego, saying that Bud Black, he doesn't really know what to do with an offense. He's not creative. He doesn't know how to deal with a team and the bats. That's not really his forte, but he is one of the best in baseball at managing a pitching staff and managing a bullpen. And he's a Rockies manager. He does not need to worry about the offense. He just needs to worry about the bullpen. And I think he's come up completely aces so far in his first, 40-odd games.
What is kind of interesting is the offense has definitely shown flashes of really big stuff. They went up 10-0 against the Dodgers. They end up winning 10-7. They won a 9-6 game against the Dodgers, but they had a game against the Cubs where they put up 10 runs. They had a game against the D-backs where they put up 9 runs. They went on the road to San Diego. They scored 11 runs in a game, but they are kind of Jekyll and Hyde right now. The night after they score 11 at San Diego, they score 3. They win a game. It's a 3-2 win. But the second game of the doubleheader against the Cubs, they score 1 run. Then they score 3 runs the next day. Then they get 10 against the Dodgers. They're very volatile right now. I think you'd like to see that smooth out a little bit. I also do think that's very much a function of the fact that right now there are guys in the middle of that lineup who you're not really sure what you're going to get from them from day to day. Ian Desmond has so far looked decent. He's a .299.
He's looked like Ian Desmond. Like he's
right.
You know,
yeah.
He just was never going to be a world beater. Doesn't take a lot of walks.
Right.
But he's done certain things well at certain times.
.299 hitter with a .742 OPS. He has struck out a ton compared to his walk rate. He's struck out 21 times in 17 games, and he has walked once.
Yep.
There have been some days where you think, okay, Ian Desmond, I could see him slotting in there and being decent. Carlos Gonzalez has been a ghost for much of the season. He's batted in a whole bunch of different spots. Maybe over the last week he's kind of getting it figured out. He had back-to-back two-hit games against the Dodgers on the 11th and 12th. That was the first two games of a five-game hitting streak. Like I said, he's got hits in six of his last seven. But he's still batting .210 with an OPS of .591. So you're not really sure what you're getting from him. And the Rockies also right now kind of have a revolving door of who is getting innings and where. Trevor Story is set to go on a rehab assignment with AAA Albuquerque soon. So Pat Valaika has gotten a lot of time at shortstop. Alexi Amarista is somehow still hitting .314 with an .819 OPS. The identity isn't really solidified yet.
The difference is this year that they don't need to score 8 runs a game to be able to win it or to be in the contest. The difference is they've been able to win those low scoring games this year, win those close games. You meant the 9-0 in 1-run games this year when they score 3 runs or less, they're 7-12.
Huh.
You know that in 10 other full seasons, the Rockies had 7 wins or fewer when scoring 3 runs or less. 10 other seasons in their history. And they're already 7-12.
They got 7 in their first 19.
The most they've ever had of scoring 3 runs or less in a season is 15. They did that in 2011 and in 2008.
Not bad.
But not bad. They're 7-12 in scoring 3 runs or less this year. In just for a comparison, let's see. Oh, yeah. 2 years ago, when they scored 3 runs or less, the team was 7-57. And this year they're 7-12 and doing the same.
Good gravy.
Think about that for a second.
That is very impressive.
Yeah.
It's almost impressive sometimes, like, when you look at the Rockies from the standpoint of, like, oh, maybe they're actually good. It's almost impressive more so looking back at how bad they've been and thinking, like, man, I didn't even realize you could be that bad in a lot of ways.
Well, they were, what, you know, 12 and 20 in one-run games, like, last year or 2 years ago, whatever it was, and now they're 9-0.
But their run differential.
No, the Rockies are 2 games up in the division right now. I mentioned that at the beginning of the show. This is the second latest they have been 2 games up in the division in their franchise history. The only time they were 2 games up or more later, 1995. They were 2 games up on September 16th.
Man. That was – I heard a new one the other
latest
day.
They have been 2 games in first place since 1995, and we are sitting here on May 18th. That is how bad the Rockies have been early in seasons. April not included.
Also kind of surprises me that the 2010 team wasn't more in control later in the year. But the other day I heard a new one. I was reading, you know, one of the standard "Do we have to take the Rockies seriously" columns. I don't even remember where this one was, and but it was a discussion about, actually it might have been the Deadspin column, which was actually pretty good, about why Rockies fans should feel like this is sustainable. And one of the points was, the Rockies in franchise history, when they have made the postseason, they've been led by good bullpens, and it said 2007-2009, or strike-shortened years, and I had never heard that as an argument before. The reason they made it in 95 is because of the strike, which I guess you could sort of make the argument because they kind of tailed off toward the end, and they were lucky to hang on for the wild card, but still.
2 of the 3 seasons they have made the playoffs in their franchise history, they have not played 162 games. We've talked about that before.
That's the new inefficiency.
That's
just
what I'm saying.
Don't play a full schedule.
Yeah, if they get one of these games late in September rained out and they play 161 and they're locked in a tight battle, they're going to the playoffs. Yeah,
they went 77 and 67
the Cubs last year
in
91, I believe. Yeah,
so, yeah, it could be. That extra day of rest, man. Let it happen. That 95 team, by the way, Pythagorean win and loss should have only gone 72-72. So. Run differential. It's very important.
But they're Pythagorean win-loss.
It's very important stuff. they're still winning. They hit the road to Cincinnati tonight for a 7:10 Eastern time first pitch against the Redlegs. And then tomorrow and Sunday. And then on the road at Philadelphia Monday through Thursday. I think at this stage, they win 2 out of 3 to start things in Minnesota. No matter what, if you go on a 10-game road trip and you come home at 5-5, you feel good.
It's a winning road trip.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's not just a Rockies thing. It's certainly more that way for the Rockies, but that's a baseball thing. You basically have to play 500 ball on the road, and you got to play above 500 at home, and you put yourself in a situation where you can contend for a playoff spot. That kind of holds true across baseball. You would like to play above 500 on the road, but as we've seen in franchise history, the Rockies are like approximately a billion games under 500 all-time in franchise history on the road. So
that's correct. An accurate number.
Yeah, that's what you have to expect with a team like the Rockies. Is things are going to happen in billions, and generally it's going to be negative billions. Because once Broncos camp comes around, you know, they're going to fall. June Swoon and the Broncos are going to beat them, as a guy on Twitter told us last night.
Yeah, which I don't – that's God damn. I don't even know what to do with that one.
Dan Lucero's response was, wait, is he suggesting that the Broncos are going to somehow make the Rockies bad?
stop paying attention.
But they if they come back at 5-5 – then I think you got to feel good about that. They lose a series in Cincinnati, let's say, and they go split in Philadelphia. You still got to feel good at 5-5 because that means that they're still going to come home at 9 games over .500. But having won 2 out of 3 at Minnesota, if you win 2 out of 3 at Cincinnati and then you win 2 out of 4 at Philadelphia, let's say, then you come home 6-4, then you've gained a game on a 10-game road trip, and that feels almost inconceivable for a Rockies team. But this is a road trip where you can put your stamp in a situation like that because you're not playing very good teams. The Reds are 19-21. The Reds started off pretty hot this year. They've very much cooled since then. They've lost six straight. Yeah. They've lost 7 of their last 10. And the Phillies are a garbage heap. They've played decently at home. They're a 500 team at home at 8-8, but they're 6-16 on the road. So there is a lot that can be made out of this road trip. And I think what it also does is puts the Rockies in a circumstance to say, like, now this road start is no joke. I mean, maybe they're not playing the toughest road schedule as of right now. The trip that I think is really going to define them is, and we mentioned this on Twitter, but we didn't mention it on the podcast yet, but at the start of this road trip, 22 of their next 29 were on the road. Yeah. They've got a weird stretch coming up. They come home from that trip to Philadelphia. They play three against the Cardinals at home and then two against the Mariners. Then they go on the road to Seattle for two. They've done this in the schedule the last few years. They've done that with Houston. They've done it with Texas. I think they did it with Cleveland once, too, where they'll kind of split a four-game road trip, two games here, two games there. So they do that with Seattle. They play the Mariners for two at home. Then they go to Seattle for two. And then they go to San Diego. But this is the weird stretch. They're at Seattle for two, at San Diego for two, then they're home against Cleveland at San Diego for three, then they're home against Cleveland for two,
I'll
and then
be
they're
there
on the road.
Both those games.
Oh, fantastic!
That's the start of my bachelor party, you dick.
You're having a bachelor party?
God. Oh.
Since when?
Sorry, you're not.
Wait,
invited.
Are you getting married? What? I didn't know these things.
What have I done?
But then they go on the road to Chicago for four and Pittsburgh for three, so they're on the road coast to coast over the span of 2 weeks, and they're only home for 2 days, and the travel is bizarre. Seattle, San Diego, home, Chicago, Pittsburgh, home. Like, that's an exhausting 2 weeks.
Saying,
that's going to be a big stretch.
If they come out of this 29-game stretch still above water, like, that's the Rockies are for real if they end up coming
even
out.
I think even if you go 13-16 over that stretch, you're still six
stretch.
Games over 500. Exactly.
If,
and
if
that's
Joe,
you've
if
got
Joe
that
Madden
in the bank.
Can blame sleep deprivation on right. why the Cubs have been shit so far this year, then the Rockies can do it too.
Joe Madden. I don't think we really discussed this, but the Cubs fans were just as bad as expected. In that home series. I went to the day game, the first game of the doubleheader. They, and I tweeted this from the podcast account, Jake Arrieta goes out in that game. He gives up nine. He's charged with nine runs on nine hits, five of them earned. He walked three, and he struck out three over 3 2/3. And as he's coming off the field, Cubs fans gave him a standing ovation because they're not Cubs fans. They're just morons that moved to Denver and were like, I love the Cubs, man. This is my team. This has been my team forever. So that was great. I was also sitting next to Nate Kreckman, who screamed out at all of them, why are you giving him a standing ovation? He's been terrible. So that was funny. But they were just as bad as expected.
Yeah, that is unsurprising.
Unsurprising. We got to make it an abbreviated show this week. I'm on the road with Denver Lacrosse, where I'm currently in Hempstead, New York. I'm overlooking the Nassau Veterans Memorial Coliseum, the former home of the New York Islanders. DU plays an NCAA quarterfinal game against Notre Dame coming up on Saturday at Hofstra University.
Hofstra University, the home of the fighting Wayne Krebets.
Yeah, the Wayne Krebets, the old Wayne Krebets.
That is Nicole's favorite football player of all time.
Really?
Really?
How random. Wayne Krebet, otherwise known as the 90s Wes Welker.
Yeah. Basically. Yeah, he was Wes Welker before Wes Welker was Wes Welker.
Yeah, he made it fashionable to be Wes Welker.
Yeah.
So I gotta go do my pregame interviews here in a few minutes. But yeah, is there anything else that we have neglected? I don't think we've neglected much. That's the thing. It's so weird. I was thinking this the other day. When they're bad, there's so much to talk about, and they're playing well, and it's
just keep on keeping on, guys.
17th straight episode. We'll talk about, man, these young starters have been good. Am I right? Am I right, though, fellas?
Well, this is going to be the first year where we're going to have to figure out how we're all going to react to the team playing well for an extended period of time. you get used to, as a fan base, used to, you know, moping around and being morose and the team being terrible from May 15th on or June, whatever it is.
Yep.
This year, it's not going to be that way, I don't think.
No,
so,
I don't think so.
We're going to see the real sides of a lot of people. We've already seen some of them, too. So
let's leave on this. At what point do you think cliche douchey Broncos fan guy will start believing this is real? As of a couple of weeks ago, like I noted, you know, the Rockies fan base, the Denver sports fan base, which removing just people who live in Denver, the actual fans of Denver sports who live in Denver, which feels like a minority, there is a sizable portion of that fan base that is just Randy Quaid from Major League Two, where when the Rockies clinch the division, they'll be sitting in the bleachers and left saying, who cares, they'll blow it in the playoffs. At what point this year do you think guys like that tool that we found on Twitter yesterday will start believing that this is real? It's May 19th. They are 10 games over 500. They've got the most wins in the National League, and they've got the most wins in National League ball on the road. When do you think people start believing, if this continues?
Game two of the NLDS.
It's probably not far off.
Hey, man, it'll be week five. Trevor Siemian will be 1-4 with the Broncos, and, you know, he'll need something else to do.
Oh, my God. Rockies host game one of the World Series tonight. We're talking about Paxton Lynch, who was spotted at Shanahan's having a T-bone last night.
Paxton Lynch coming off a game where he really improved, going 12 of 38.
Taking your calls on a jam-packed show. I think if they make it to the All-Star break – and they are leading or are very close to the division lead, we'll see people start to buy in. And then, honestly, that'll make my blood boil.
Yeah, right.
Oh, welcome aboard. Yeah, nice of you to join
great.
Us.
Thanks.
We haven't talked about Greg Holland. Greg Holland is now 18 of 18 in save situations.
Greg Netherlands.
His last two have been very cheap. And
they're inventing, like what Mark Haas is saying, they're inventing ways to get him the NL Cy Young, which is
just
perfect.
Bringing him into games with like a four-run lead and the tying run on deck and one out to go and getting him a save. So saves are kind of dumb too. But when they work in favor of the Rockies, they're the greatest thing ever. That's pretty much it. Next week we could be back to normal if DU loses this weekend. I'll be back home. I won't be traveling for a long time, and things could return to normal. If DU wins, they're on to championship weekend coming up next week at Foxborough. So it depends on DU what the show will be like next week. But if things are back to normal, we'll kind of blow things out. We'll get some guests and we'll have some fun. And it'll be good.
It will be fun. What number was this? Like 105?
104. Four. Believe it.
No, oh, no, I can't.
Mother of God. It's ridiculous. That'll do it for an abbreviated edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. Buy our shirts, purpledinosaurpodcast.bigcartel.com, 20th and Blake shirt, Party Deck Against the World shirt, Denver Bears shirt, all that good stuff. And follow us on Twitter at Purple Dinocast. Anthony is at Master Tones. I am at Tyler Mon. You can get in touch with the show. Send us your music.
Oh, yeah.
We'll open the show with some original music as soon as we get some in the bank. PurpleDinosaurPodcast@gmail.com. And that's it, and that's all. Okay. Bye.
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 Bye.